You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I love Gong in a DUI-only league. Also contributes in sexual assault, so he's like a multi-category contributor here.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And man, that plate of food was coming right for me. And then some dick knocked into the waiter, and I watched this plate of food just drop right onto the goddamn ground.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Man, going back to your analogy about going out to dinner and seeing a plate of food, I feel like you and Sammy are out to dinner and me and Matt are just collecting scrap heaps off the ground.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 227 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike Warner and Matt Thompson. Mike, how you doing?
I tell you what, I don't think our podcast could ever be worse than what Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway did at the Oscars last night. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Oh my God.
Man, we had the Grammys last week, then we got the Oscars this week.
I know, but that was... What happened last night was the best. I mean, it wasn't the best. I mean, they got embarrassed and, you know, La La Land was certainly, it was tough for them to be on stage and then have to pass an Oscar over to the real winners of the award itself. But it was honestly the biggest what the fuck moment I've ever seen on TV in my life, live TV at least.
You know what? I mean, for me, I've thought for and wondered for years at award shows, like, if someone just read off the wrong name on purpose or on accident, like, what would they do? And last night we found out, first time in 88 years, that the wrong name has been read out for an Oscar. I mean, kudos to the dude who, like, you know, like, totally is like, hey, you know, you guys won, come on up here, you know, I'm happy to pass this award to you. But at the same time, what a fucking clusterfuck. Matt, how are you?
Speaking of clusterfucks, I guess it was time for me to talk. I've been busy.
I agree on that.
You know, I went down to St. Louis to Mardi Gras over the weekend, got a flat tire on the way home. You know, good stuff. Started the new old job again today, so good stuff. And Tim Tebow hit 9 home runs in BP today, so.
Wait. Yeah? Did you just say no? Mardi Gras?
Yeah, I went down to St. Louis for Mardi Gras. It's kind of like the baby version of New Orleans, and they do it a little early.
Oh, okay, because I was about to say, I was like, I did not think it was Mardi Gras on, like, Sunday or Monday.
No, for St. Louis.
Usually, it literally translates to Tuesday.
Yeah, hey, they just told me there would be beer there, so I was there.
All right. Well, for those of you who don't, like, follow me on social media and stuff, I was a participant in an industry league that I... you know, helped put together and done for the last 2 years, called the Bay Area Roto Fantasy League, also known as BARF. It was a lot of fun, and I got to meet some pretty cool people this time around. You know, Ray Flowers and Howard Bender and Laura Michaels were in it last year, but this year we added two new guys in the industry that are amazing. One is Doug Thorburn, and the other is joining us today, Sammy Reed of Baseballaholics. Sammy, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. I'm a big fan of the show. I'm pretty fired up to be here.
Yeah, I'm pretty fired up to have you here, too, because you sniped me a whole fucking lot. all Saturday. So
yeah, that was probably the highlight of my preseason so far. So I'm really happy that that happened. It really filled my heart with a lot of joy to snipe you.
Well, Sammy, we are glad to have you here, even though you did kind of murder my team at certain points throughout the draft. But before we kind of jump into our third base preview, why don't you let people know where that you can be on social media, and then kind of where you write, where you podcast, and things like that, so people can find your work.
Yeah, man. My Twitter handle's at SammyReedFI. I'm a writer for Fantasy Insiders, so I do a lot of DFS content for both baseball and football there. And then I also do the Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast with my boy Doug Thorburn. It's just a fun podcast. It's not fantasy-centric. It's just baseball-centric because we're baseball geeks. And, yeah, we like to have a good time with it.
It is a fantastic podcast. I highly recommend everybody go out and download, subscribe, give it a rate and review. It is definitely one of my go-tos, and they play fun games, which is like one of my favorite parts of the show, aside from the amazing content in terms of analysis.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's the funnest part of the show for us. It's a chance for us to show off our knowledge and then also to get really embarrassed in front of a lot of people. So,
which definitely happened. Sammy blew a lead in a game a couple episodes ago, which was absolutely legendary.
Was it a 3-1 lead?
Moment like 2 weeks ago, and it was fairly epic.
Yeah. No, it was actually kind of worse than a 3-1 lead.
Ooh.
But before we jump actually into our third base preview, what do you think of your team in the Barf League, Sammy? We won't go too like in depth into these because one, Matt and Mike will be bored since they're not in that league, and two, I'm sure the listeners don't care too much. But what were your overall thoughts? It's a 12-team league, 5x5, but instead of average in wins, it's quality starts and OBP. What were your overall thoughts about your team?
You know, I spent this entire draft tilting, and so it was really, I mean, I was on such tilt, I took Trevor Story in the second round. The whole thing, like, started off on this whole disaster, and I really felt like I got the draft back when I went with Jose Bautista in the seventh round. This is an on-base league, so I think Bautista walks a lot, and he hits a lot of home runs. He's a fine pick, and he's just been devalued a lot. And then I got Miguel Sano on the way back. That was the one that tilted you.
Yeah.
That was the one that tilted you so hard, and it just felt like I kind of figuratively just punched you in the nards right there, and that's really when my draft turned around and really started going well. So overall, looking at it now, I'm pretty fired up on the team.
Yeah, I'm looking over your team right now. You let off with Kershaw, which I thought was a great pick, you know, and then you hit Story on the wraparound in the second round. But to me, like, there's definitely a couple guys that really kind of rubbed me the wrong way because, like you said, you took them from me. We're going to talk about Miguel Sano a little bit later, but you also, Nelson Cruz, Ian Desmond, the Rajay Davis pick, and Garrett Richards, who's been my boy for a long time. So, you know, we thought it'd be cool to have you on, on this episode because it was right after the Barth draft, and now I'm thoroughly regretting it.
Yes, and I'm very glad as the show goes on, I'm sure you'll grow to regret it more. I think one of those things as, you know, when you take Kershaw in the first round, you really spend the rest of the draft trying to catch up on hitting. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's a real different dynamic than most of the others in the draft. So you have to kind of take some guys a little bit early. You have to kind of fill in where other people are already full. And overall, I thought I did a pretty good job in terms of like on base. I got some like... There's just a lot of veterans that I got later. Matt Holliday, you know, Nelson Cruz in the third, Ben Zobrist, those kind of guys, Adrian Gonzalez, that I think are really solid in on-base percentage, that I think are really going to help make up for the loss of not having a stud pitcher or a stud hitter with the first round. So,
yeah, no, I think you did a very good job, and I'll be writing an article for FanGraphs on this. Ray Flowers, Warren Michaels, Howard Bender have already put articles up. You can find those over at Fantasy Alarm for Howard and Ray's, and at Masters Ball for Lore, and they're free versions. You don't have to be a subscriber to access those articles. So definitely go check that out. And if you're in the San Francisco area, go check out the Rec Room San Francisco. It's on California Street. Arbar Todd was our host and helps me put it together, and he did a fantastic job, as usual, getting pretty much the entire draft outside of me shit-faced.
Bro, I could not recommend the Rec Room enough, man. It was a great atmosphere. The drinks were good. The vibe was good. If you're out in the city, man, definitely check that place out.
Definitely, definitely. But that's enough about the Barf Draft. I'm sure it'll be brought up now and again throughout the rest of the offseason and throughout the rest of this episode. But let's jump into our third base preview. Chris Bryant broke out last year, as a lot of people predicted. He's considered a top five pick this year, pretty much consensus. Sammy, what are your thoughts on Chris Bryant for this year? Is he a top five pick for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the number one pick if you're going for boyish good looks and captivating eyes. I think that last year he really advanced his game in terms of when he first came up. I mean, he was kind of being mentioned in the same breath as Joey Gallo, right? This guy with prodigious power who struck out too much. His rookie year, he struck out 30.6% of the time and had a 213 ISO. Last year, he dropped that to 22% K rate, and his ISO went up to 262, which was he was 13th in the league in hard hit rate. So I think he's worthy of a top three pick. It's kind of a dividing line if you like him or Arenado better. And for me, I like Arenado better in like most regular leagues, but I like Bryant on both Yahoo, where he's got the triple first, third, and outfield eligibility, and then also in OBP leagues, I like Bryant a bit better.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Chris Bryant for this season?
Yeah, you have to love him, man. I have him as my third player overall behind Trout and Jose Altuve. Got Bryant there. I like the outfield eligibility added on to that, and like Sammy said, first base too in Yahoo. The strikeout rate, cutting that while increasing the power, is phenomenal. I mean, you look at the defensive gains he's made. He used to be looked at as a player that might be a liability at third. Now he's actually probably an asset at third base. He's got potential for more. I mean, 39 home runs, and you really think he's kind of at the tip of the iceberg here. I wouldn't be shocked if he, you know, even put it together even more and was able to hit 45, you know, 47 home runs or something like that this year. It really feels a little bit of a wild card with how it plays. But anytime you can cut the strikeouts like that and without changing your approach and still hitting for, if not more power than you ever had, then, I mean, the sky's really the limit here. So that's probably the last good thing you hear me say about him, but I like Chris Bryant this year.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Chris Bryant?
I was going to say, are you sure you want to talk to Matt and I? I feel like we're the third and fourth wheels on the show. I just feel kind of...
Well, you should be used to that by now.
Yeah, I pretty much am. But I don't know what else to really say about Bryant that you guys haven't really touched on. I think the fact that he has all of this eligibility in other spots is nice, and that's something that would put him in front of Arenado for me in those particular places. But I would still take Arenado in standard formats with the eligibility piece kind of being thrown out the window, because I think that he is a little bit safer. But what I was harping on with Bryant last season when he was going borderline, you know, first round, second round, was the fact that his contact rate was so bad, and if that continued, he wouldn't be able to get on base / hit as many home runs. Now, with that said, he improved it so much. Percentage points is a massive improvement based on what he was doing the year before. I don't think he'll be a stolen base guy. The Cubs were almost 20th in stolen base attempts per game last year, but I do think the batting average will stay the same, and I think that he could definitely challenge for 45-50 home runs this year if everything broke right for him. He's absolutely a top five pick.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add. I think I'm with Matt in terms of, I think I have him as my number three overall player behind Trout and Altuve. I mean, it's really hard to kind of split hairs between, you know, the top five, six guys this year, but Bryant's definitely in the mix on that. I do love the positional eligibility, especially if you play in leagues like Yahoo that kind of give it a little bit more flexibility. But he's a stud. What can you say? I was completely wrong on him last year. I thought he was going to strike out too much. I wasn't a big fan of where he was going, and he obviously proved me and a lot of other people wrong, and has just established himself as one of the best players in fantasy baseball. All right, let's move on to Matt Carpenter. And when we talked about St. Louis Cardinals, who are a little bit overrated, we always throw it to Matt. Matt, what do you think of Matt Carpenter?
Carpenter, I think everyone kind of forgets how good of a season he actually had last year, because before he had the oblique injury, he was on career high pace in every counting stat until he got hurt, and then he came back too early and kind of his second half he struggled. Second half was a you saw the power. The batting average down to 232. Only hit 7 homers and a little bit under 200 at-bats, as opposed to 14 homers and 275 at-bats with a near 300 batting average in the first half. If you play an on-base percentage format, you got to bump Carpenter up. He's really elite in that category. He's hitting third this year for the Cardinals, so their RBIs should be more plentiful behind Fowler and Diaz. So I think that's a good spot to hit. First base, second base, third base eligibility is always nice. I think Carpenter is very underrated. I'm glad to get him everywhere. And, he does play for the Cardinals. So, I mean, yeah, I do like him. But I actually do really, really think he's underrated. He's safe. He's good for 270 average and probably a little bit higher. The 275 average and 20, 25 homers if he stays healthy. So if he stays healthy, which no reason why he shouldn't, he's already got a home run this spring. We can feel safe to invest in Carpenter, that's for sure.
Sammy, what are your thoughts on Matt Carpenter for this season?
Dude, I've always been a big Matt Carpenter fan, and what really impresses me about him is that he's really evolved as a hitter as he's gotten into his late 20s and now in his early 30s. The last 3 years, his pull percentage has gone up every year from 32% to 39% to 48% last year, and his hard hit rates have gone up as well, 33% to 37% to 42%. That 42% hard hit rate was third in all of Major League Baseball last year behind David Ortiz and Freddie Freeman. So he's also a dude you talked about how good he is in on-base percentage leagues. He has a walk rate over 12% every season, got the triple eligibility. I think he's just a sick fifth-round pick in on-base leagues. Maybe bump him down around in standard leagues to the sixth because his batting average is solid but not elite. But I love the guy. I think he's a great pick in all formats.
Mike, do you agree on Matt Carpenter?
Absolutely. Yahoo eligibility, which is always crazy, has him first, second, third base, and I think that that's amazing value for him. If he didn't get injured last year, then he probably would have hit upwards of 30 home runs. That's what he was on pace for. And, you know, really since 2015, he has spiked that power up. Like Sammy kind of mentioned with the pull percentage, it's really started to trend in his favor. And the plate skills have always been great for him. He doesn't, you know, limit the strikeouts a ton, but he's kind of went over to a new power approach, and I love it. I think he's going to continue to hit 25 plus home runs. The runs will be there overall because he's stayed pretty consistent in that. Prior to last season, he had 99 or more runs scored in each of the last 3 years before then, and the batting average is fairly safe at 270 as well. I have nothing bad to say about Matt Carpenter.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the projections out there, and they have him taking a step back in power in more plate appearances than he had last season. Specifically, I'm talking about depth.
Projections hate him, man.
And
they
Steamer,
always
yeah,
do.
And I mean, I understand like why, because he did miss time last year with an injury, and so that kind of bakes into it. But to me, and he only had 8 home runs in 2014, so I'm sure that affects a little bit. But to me, I think 21 home runs he hit last year is kind of his floor. And so to me, it's like, I feel like the draft position he's going at is warranted, especially not only does he have first, second, and third base eligibility in Yahoo, he has it in every format because he played at least 38 games at each position last year. So it doesn't matter what format you're playing, he's going to have triple eligibility, which is amazing, especially because first base is extremely shallow this year. So I'm a guy that you can kind of put as your second or third baseman and then move over at first base if you need him. I think is really, really nice. You guys mentioned the high OBP. Love that, especially because a lot of formats are going over to OBP. I like the fact that he struck out less than he did in 2015. He walked more. I don't think there's really any downside to Matt Carpenter. I think he's got an extremely safe floor, and I don't think that people are accounting for the fact that I think Mike mentioned, like, he was on pace for over 30 home runs last year before he got injured. So I think there's a relatively high ceiling. So I love Matt Carpenter. All right,
there
let's
you go.
Yeah, let's go ahead and move over to Evan Longoria. And when we talk about old Rays, we always throw it to Mike. Mike, what are your thoughts on Evan Longoria?
You know, I got to say, I did the Rays preview with Yancey Eaton, and when we were going over Longoria,
Are you talking about the six-hour Rays preview that you and Yancey Eaton did?
We had to cut out a lot of it because me and him went on and on for a while. So you guys only saw the two-hour version. There was a lot more.
How much of the episode was dedicated to Corey Dickerson?
Oh, we actually made a whole separate show. We just didn't release it yet. So
yeah, the C-Dick show. Yeah.
Yeah. We made the C-Dick show with Yancey and Mike. We're going to try and make that like a permanent thing. So stay tuned for that. But no, overall, I was a lot more harsh on Longoria when we did that show, just because part of me doesn't believe what he did last year. He had kind of a resurgence in power. He hit 280 against righties last year for the first time since 2012. And, you know, the 36 home runs, while it's great, the whole league had a massive spike in power. So how much do I believe in that? I don't know, but I do think, you know, based on where he's going about pick 100. I think the floor for his power is somewhere in the 25 plus home run range. He is going to continue to hit in the middle of the Rays lineup. He's been consistent in terms of playing time over the last four seasons, 600 plus at bats every single year. So, you know, overall, while I don't think he has massive upside, I don't think the downside is that bad either. And based on where you're getting him, you're not really paying for any type of, you know, meaningful regression at that point either. You're, you know, pretty much paying for what you get at that point. So I'm a little bit higher on him than I was a couple months ago, but it doesn't mean that in shallow leagues I would take a shot on him, because I do think there's other options that have just a bit higher upside for me.
Sammy, what are your thoughts on Evan Longoria?
You know, man, it was great to see him have his resurgence last year. Obviously, he hit 36 dongs. He was 23rd in barrel percentage, so his batted ball data was really nice. But I guess the thing with him is that there's a lot of warning signs. He's on the wrong side of 30. His walk rate is in a six-year decline, and his strikeout rate has gone up three straight years. In a fantasy sense, he doesn't steal. He doesn't score runs. He's in a bad ballpark. He's in a squalor lineup. I guess he's fine, but when I'm picking right around there, I think you said he's like pick 100 to 110, somewhere in there. I'd rather take a chance on similar guys with more upside, guys like Chris Davis with a K, Sano, Joey Bautista, even a guy like Jake Lamb, like 3 to 4 rounds later, I put on pretty equal footing. And I just think there's more value in those other players right around where he's going.
Matt, do you agree with that, or are you on the Longoria
bedwagon? Yeah, I'm not on the Longoria bedwagon. I got to love what he did last year, though, the 36 home runs. I'm not counting on that again. It's just a lot of things trending like Sammy said, a lot of things trending in the wrong direction, and the age is the thing that scares me. But I'm not going to take Longoria because I don't like where he's going. I like Mikel Franco, Justin Turner are a little bit round or two later, and they're better values for me. So it's nothing personal, Evan, but I just don't like the value for me. So sorry, bud.
Yeah, I was extremely down on him coming into last season. And I looked a little bit foolish after what he did, but I think I'm with you guys. I know he's been in at least 650 plate appearances over the course each season over the course of the last 4 years. I wonder, as he gets older, if we start seeing a resurgence of maybe some of the injury issues he had earlier in his career. I definitely don't believe the 36 home runs. I don't think he goes back to his 2014, 2015 levels. I think Mike's right. I think you pencil him in for 25. Anything on top of that is gravy. But I think, like Matt kind of alluded to, there's a ton of depth at third base. I mean, and I just feel like you can wait on third if you've waited that long already, and go with a guy like Franco, go with a guy like Jake Lamb, go with a guy like Ryan Healy or Mike Moustakas later. And attack a different position at that point. I don't necessarily have a ton of like hate if people want to take him around that spot, especially if you start freaking out after missing out on like the top 10 third baseman. Because, I mean, he's coming off as the 12th third baseman off the board. That's not like an exorbitant price. I just think it's I worry about the Rays lineup. You know, I make jokes a lot, mostly at Mike's expense, in terms of the Rays lineup. And I think it is a little bit better than maybe I pretended to be. But it also has a lot of question marks and a lot of scary parts, especially, you know, in the 4 through 8 kind of spots. So I think that...
Guys, Yancey just unfollowed all of us on Twitter. I want you to know.
Except me. Except me, of course, because we got to keep the C-Dick thing running.
Yeah, no. I mean, I love Corey Dickerson. I mean, don't...
He's going to lead off this year, just so you know.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Corey Dickerson, you know... I wrote an article last year about when he, you know, moved out of Colorado, how I felt he was underrated. Because of that, I've taken him in a bunch of leagues, including both BARF and the CBS AL only auction. I think Matt Duffy is extremely underrated, but I mean, you know, would it surprise me if both those guys had bad years and the guys who follow him in the lineup had bad years as well? And Colby Rasmus, who knows if he's going to even be healthy for the start of the year? Steven Souza, you know, what is he going to do? Logan Morrison, I mean, you know, he could be Longoria could be a guy that doesn't score a ton of runs because of the production behind him. And that, to me, is a little bit more of a knock, and I think I'd probably just rather wait and grab a little bit better value later on. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about kind of an up-and-coming young star in the making. That's Alex Bregman. Matt, you're our prospect guy. What are your thoughts on Alex Bregman in his first full season?
I like Bregman a lot. I like the overall package here. I mean, everything you look at, right from his LSU days to now, point to high contact rate. Should be up above the 80% mark, which is always good. The thing people forget, do you remember last year how slow he got out of the gate?
Mm-hmm.
He was like 1 for
36 or something like
30,
that.
Something
2 for
like that
38, I think.
To start the season off, yeah, and he still managed a 264, 313, 478 line. After his one, is 1 for 34. After he went 1 for 34, he hit 311 the rest of the way out. So, I mean, you look at a lot of the projection systems right now, depth charts and Fangraphs and Steamer. Steamer has him hitting 267. I think that's a bit low just because based on what he did for – I know it's a small sample size, but he's got the pedigree. He's got – if you watch him play, you just know he's legit. I kind of think, though, this year he's getting drafted too high. I'm not sure for 2017 only. There's not a lot separating Bregman from somebody like Justin Turner, besides Turner's obviously health issues. But if Turner stays healthy, I think the numbers will probably sway towards Turner's direction. Obviously, there's risk in something like that. But obviously, going forward, Bregman's a stud. But I think he's getting overdrafted this year. I mean, everyone, you know how us fantasy guys are. We love the shiny new toys. He's in a really, really good lineup. That doesn't help his cause. Position switch to third. I think he'd be a shortstop on any other team. But I think the helium is a little bit too high with Bregman right now, but he's still a hell of a player, but not for me this year.
Sammy, what are your thoughts on Bregman for this season?
Yeah, I actually kind of have similar thoughts. I mean, first off, I have a giant stiffy for Bregman. This is a dude who 146 minor league games, he hit 300 with a 388 on base, 24 homers and 20 steals. And the most important thing for me is his mastery of the strike zone, 76 walks against only 68 strikeouts. The other thing is that I think the Astros are one of the best lineups in the major leagues. They've done a ton to improve it without compromising their core. I want as many Astro shares as possible. The thing is, when you look at Bregman, you'd be pretty fired up on like a 350 on base, 20 homers, 12 steals, 91 runs, 85 RBIs, right? That's exactly what Anthony Rendon went last year. And Rendon is going with pretty much the same pick. They're both on average going 93rd in NFBC. I just think there's a lot more safety in a guy like Rendon. I really like Bregman long-term, but I agree that the helium is a little high for him this season in comparison to the other guys at the position.
Can we make the word stiffy a thing? Like, bring it back?
Oh, yeah.
That was a good word.
I've been on that since I turned about 12 years old.
reminds me of Stiffmeister from American Pie. Like
Stifler.
The Stiffmeister.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get it. We need to bring that word back.
Maybe we can just call Bregman the Stiffmeister.
Alex Stiffy.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Alex Stiffy?
Well, he gives me a stiffy as well, so the name is definitely consistent with what he provides. But I completely agree. I think that he's going too high in drafts. He was taken 87th in labor mixed, and that's about where you're going to have to take him, I think. While I do love Bregman, and we were touting him all last year in the prospect show, I mean, everything about him I love. So in future fantasy years, and especially keeper dynasty leagues, he's an absolute buy for me. I don't think that Houston is going to give him the opportunity to run enough to where he's going to be stealing 15, 20 bases. And, you know, while he did hit great after that really slow start, I mean, you would pretty much have to pencil him in for 90 plus runs for him to equate the value in which you're paying for him. And I just can't do that. 20 home runs is also, you know, nice, but I think that there's other guys that offer the same amount of power later in drafts. They also could have the opportunity to score the same amount of runs. The batting average floor, I think, is somewhere in the 270, 280 range based on his skill set. But, you know, where he's projected to hit in the lineup is about sixth, seventh, eighth right now. And I just can't pencil him in for 90 plus runs at that spot in the lineup. Mind you, there are going to be injuries. They have Carlos Beltran and, you know, Josh Reddick on roster, Brian McCann as well. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be guys that end up getting injured, which might move Bregman up in the lineup. But for now, at least, you're looking at a guy that I have projected under about 80 runs, a little bit under, with about 18 to 20 home runs and, you know, 10 stolen bases. And that's just something that I think I can get later in the draft.
Yeah, I think what you bring up in terms of where he's batting in the lineup is really important because I mean, he's right-handed, so are Springer, Altuve, and Correa. I don't think that the Astros at any point really want to be batting four right-handed bats at the top of their lineup. So I don't think he's going to move much higher than maybe sixth in this lineup. And, I mean, just because he was hot after he struggled doesn't mean he can't struggle again. We saw Correa struggle in his second season, first full season at the majors last year. Wouldn't be surprising to me to see a guy like Bregman struggle. I think he is a very interesting talent long term, and I was not I did not think he was going to hit for this kind of power this early in his career, and so part of me is a little bit skeptical of the idea that he's going to hit more than 20 home runs at the major league level this year. And if he doesn't hit more than 20 home runs, he's not really that interesting of a commodity to me because I don't believe the stolen bases are going to go up hitting, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh in that lineup. So for me, I'm probably out at the current price. I think, again, the guys going after him, Longoria, Franco, Lamb, Ryan Healy, all guys that I think I might rather take a shot on. I think Healy's probably the iffy one out of that grouping.
He doesn't offer any eligibility either other than third base. He just stays strictly there.
Yeah, I mean, when he had shortstop eligibility last year in a number of leagues, that made him really interesting. But losing that eligibility because Correa is obviously holding down shortstop really doesn't add to his value at all. All right, let's go ahead and move on, and we're going to talk about the aforementioned Miguel Sano, who is unlawfully stolen from me in the barf draft by Sammy Reed. So, Sammy, throw it to you. Do you feel guilty at all about stealing Miguel Sano from me?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, this was basically the highlight of my entire day. It made me happy inside to feel the pain coming from you two picks away. I love Miguel Sano. I love Miguel Sano like, I don't know, like Faye Dunaway likes reading the wrong Oscar winner for Best Picture, man. And I'll say this. I mean, you look at Miguel Sano and you say, yeah, he had a bad 2016 because he hit 236. But the reality is, he still hit 25 taters in 116 games, and he was top 20 in all of Major League Baseball in both average exit velocities and barrel. Now, you look at him and you say, yeah, he's going to have a low average because he strikes out all the time, and that's very true. But I play in a lot of on-base percentage leagues. Obviously, Barf was an on-base percentage league. This is a guy with a 13% career walk rate. He's averaging 88 walks and 36 homers per 162 games in his career, and he just finished his age 23 season. He's eligible at both third and outfield. I'm a huge fan of this guy. I think he's got huge upside. Obviously better in on-base leagues than average leagues, but when you're there in the middle rounds, the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th round, whatever your league format is, and he's sitting there, man, I just think he's a huge value. I'm a big fan, and I'll tell you, me and Doug on our Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast, we actually sponsor his page on Baseball Reference. So we started that a couple of years ago.
That's yeah. Love. And, that's love and so right there.
Yeah, so he's definitely a favorite. And the fact that I snaked him from you, Mason, that just makes it all the better. I actually want to throw it back to you. And I'd really like for you to describe to the listeners how it felt to get your rightful, you know, player stolen from you by me.
You know the feeling like when, you know, you're at your favorite restaurant or wherever you're at and you order your favorite dish and it's like coming out to you and you can just smell it. You can just smell how amazing that food, that plate of food is. And I was sitting there in what was like the eighth round or, you know, seventh or eighth round, just salivating over the fact that Miguel Sano was going to drop to me in an on-base percentage lead, and I've pretty much gotten him everywhere this year. Every draft at my NFBC draft, the AL only CBS auction. I mean, every draft, every mock, I'm ending up with Miguel Sano, whether it's an average league or an on-base percentage league, because I believe the power is going to take a huge step forward this year, as long as he's healthy. Love the third base and outfield position. And man, that plate of food was coming right for me. And then some dick knocked into the waiter, and I watched this plate of food just drop right onto the goddamn ground, and it ruined my fucking night. Absolutely ruined it. I mean,
yes!
It was like the worst feeling in the world, especially because that dick then proceeded to stomp all over it, you know, like it was my heart just laying on the ground. And that was you, obviously. It actually really threw me because, like, I didn't have, like, a backup lined up. I don't even remember who I took, but
you took Lorenzo Cain.
I took Lorenzo Cain, which I'm okay with. I love Lorenzo Cain, but it's not Miguel Sano. It's not, you know, the guy that I really feel like I'm getting in every single one of my drafts. It was a very, very bitter moment, one that I will not let you live down for the rest of our friendship.
This is great. I mean, this is the reason why you live draft, right? I mean, mm-hmm. So many of our drafts these days are done online behind a computer screen, and to do something live and to inflict that kind of just emotional pain into somebody, that is why we play fantasy baseball, guys.
It really is. I mean, you know, and if you don't play in any live drafts, find 12 guys, you know, or 11 guys, and get together, because there is nothing like watching your opponent just crumble when you take their guy. And there's nothing worse than, you know, feeling that pain that I felt when Sammy stepped on my heart in front of a bunch of other industry guys. It was pretty sad, you know. As far as the analysis goes, like I said, I think he's going to, you know, hit 30 plus home runs this year. I think he's going to do it with a 12 to 14% walk rate, which is great in on-base percentage leagues. In average leagues, I'm a guy who I talk a lot about punting average anyways, and so he kind of fits perfectly into that strategy. I love the fact you can move him between third and outfield depending on how your draft goes, because that gives you some really interesting in-draft positional flexibility. I think he's just going to, you know, people forget that this was one of the top prospects in baseball. He has a huge pedigree, lost time in the minors due to Tommy John surgery, but really showed off that power in 2015, hitting 33 home runs between AA and the majors, 18 of which were in the majors, and walked it at almost 16% clip in 2015. So I know last year was a down year. I thoroughly expect him to be a bounce-back candidate, and I love Sano. Matt, what are your thoughts on Miguel Sano for this year?
There's a lot of question marks. I know you guys touched on the injuries. He had some work ethic and makeup problems, and the strikeouts and stuff pile up. And we can sound the horn, best shape of your life, 15 mm-hmm. pounds down this off season. So
doesn't matter. God,
I love hearing all that stuff, right? But I think one underrated thing is the Twins messed with Sano a lot last year, moving him from the outfield to third base. I think he even DH'd some. And I think it's good for him, and not that he's a particularly good asset at third base, because he's not. But I think it's going to be good for him to kind of sit in one spot in the field and just hit home runs, because I think that's ultimately what the skill set is. And you're going to look at a guy, if he stays healthy, he should easily clear the 30 home run mark, if not more than that. OBP formats, you guys all touched on this, he's a stud. I'll be looking to add him in OBP formats, but I think in standard 5x5, kind of falls into the area, again, like Longoria, where I said I'm always finding a little bit better. I'm trying to get pitching in this part of the draft, or trying to get one of my five outfielders that I need. While Sano does fit that bill, I think I want someone a little bit safer, and I can't get past the injury history for a 23-year-old. So I kind of have Sano a little bit lower than most.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Sano? Stud or dud?
Man, going back to your analogy about going out to dinner and seeing a plate of food, I feel like you and Sammy are out to dinner and me and Matt are just collecting scrap heaps off the ground.
Yeah.
God, yeah. Thanks for calling on me. Appreciate it. Anyways, talking about stiffies, Miguel Cano gives me a bigger stiffy than Bregman, especially for this year. Let's take a little bit of time and go back for a second. So Miguel Cano in 2014 goes under Tommy John surgery and is out the entire year. So he comes back in 2015 and is in the minors in Double A, hits 15 bombs, hits 274, blah, 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 gets a promotion up to the Twins and, you know, hits 18 home runs and 335 player appearances, hits 269, probably BABIP and fueled. But at the end of the day, he still walked and the strikeouts were apparent, but he hit for power. Then last year, he, you know, he ends up making the Twins, but then he gets injured again and, you know, also has to change positions. And yes, again, he dealt with strikeout problems and everything, but everything that this tells me is that there's been nothing consistent in terms of Miguel Sano, in terms of his role and in terms of health over the last 2 years. If he's come into spring healthy for once this year, and then on top of that, he should be in a clear defined role as well. I think the upside for Sano is immense, and where he's going in drafts is even better for me. I love him this year. I got into a little bit of an argument with Ryan Bloomfield, friend of the show on Twitter, and Alex Chamberlain as well, because they like K-Riss Davis in front of him, who is going about 15 spots in front, and I get that and everything, but with Sano, I think he offers the same power, 40-plus home run power. He's going a little bit later, and in OBP formats, he's safe. It's not even a risk with him. He's absolutely safe. If he can just – I mean, he's been somebody in the minor leagues that's been able to get the strikeouts a bit under control and hit for a little bit higher batting average. If you can project him for even like 255 this year, he's going to hit 40 plus home runs. And that's also if he stays in the lineup and has 500 plus at bats. I'm absolutely in love with Sano. He's one of the guys that I have my mark on for this year, and I think he's going to be an absolute star.
Well, and I think that's a really good, interesting conversation, because I mean, I was actually going to ask, like, who would you rather have between him and Chris Davis with a K? And as much as I love Chris Davis, and I was huge on him last year before the breakout, I mean, I think they both have similar power upside, and I think Sano bats in the better lineup, which to me, and is in the better park.
Doesn't matter. Davis proved that last year.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, both of them have real man strength, but I mean, I think I would rather have Sano. Sammy, would you rather have Sano or Chris Davis with a K?
Yeah, give me Sano, baby. You know it.
Matt, would you rather Sano or Chris Davis with a K?
I'm going to be the eyeball. Go Davis with the K.
Yeah, I just want to say this, because if you're looking at it from what they've done the last couple of years and based on safety, I think K-Riss Davis is the better play. But I'm somebody that thinks that, you know, narrative belongs in fantasy sports, and Sano is the type of guy that I have a gut feeling about. Just throwing past the stats and all that stuff, I'm rooting for Sano, and that's the type of guy I want to draft.
Yeah, you know what? I'm usually the guy who hates narratives, but to me, I look at the lineups, and I think, you know, I mean, Sano walks almost twice what Chris Davis does. On average. So, I mean, I think I'd rather have the guy in the better lineup who walks more. I don't know. I mean, I understand the injury past, but as far as we can tell right now, he's healthy. And it's not like Chris Davis has a long history of healthy seasons. So I think I'm going with Sano there, I think, and pretty easily. Coming soon from the minds that gave you the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Fantasy Sports Podcasts is a new venture, Survivor, Friends with Fantasy Benefits style. All right, let's go ahead and move on to a different guy. And talk about the guy I did end up in with the Barf League, and that's Jake Lamb of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mike, what are your thoughts on Lamb this year?
Well, hold on, I got called on first. That's not even allowed
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, well, you complain so much, I've got to throw you a bone every once in a while.
I love Jake Lamb. I absolutely love what he did last year, and he obviously got hurt, and that's been something that's been fairly consistent with him. But his power finally jumped, his home run to fly ball jumped. He plays in an amazing ballpark. He's going to hit in a solid spot in an Arizona lineup that I think is going to be strong this year. His draft slot is really, really economical at 150-ish. I have nothing bad to say about Jake Lamb. He hit 270 against righties last year. I will say the one knock on him is against lefties, which is kind of a problem. He hit 164 against them in 110 at bats last year, so he might get platooned a bit this year, but I'm marking him in for 500 at bats, which is about what he did last year, and he's already proven he can hit for power. He also walks at a fairly consistent rate as well. He bumped it up to 11% last year when it was 9% the year before. He will strike out a little bit, but the hard contact, the power, it's all consistent with his profile, and I think that he's a bargain.
Sammy, what are your thoughts on Jake Lamb?
Pretty much ditto right there. I mean, I just think he's super underrated and underdrafted, going right now as the 16th third baseman, average ADP 149. Me and our boy Paul Spohr, we like to call him Rake Lamb because he's just a boss, man. This guy, I mean, he had a terrible second half, right? He, in the preseason, he changed his batting stance. He dropped his hands lower. He got him closer to his body. It allowed him to elevate better, hit the ball in the air more. He finished up, and then he hurt his hand in the second half. So he had a terrible second half, still ended up with 29 taters and 11% walk rate, as you mentioned. That's at age 25. When you look at what he did in the minor leagues, this was a guy that had over a 400 on base and an over 550 slugging in his minor league career. Great hitter's park, like you mentioned, behind Goldie and Pollock. I'll tell you, Justin, even though I tilted the hell out of you with Miguel Sano, I thought you did a really good job getting Rake Lamb a couple rounds later, and I think that was a really slick move by you.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost a little bit out of desperation because he was like one of the last third basemen on the board when I got him that I was really comfortable with going into the season. And I do worry about like his platoon's stats, especially against left-handed pitching, only hit 164 against them last year. But, I mean, it's a small sample size, only 129 plate appearances. He did hit four home runs in those 129 plate appearances. So I think there's room for improvement, and I think they're going to give him a chance to work it out. But if he struggles, he's just a guy, you know, you're getting so late that you have a bench option. You know, he's more than likely not going to be your starting third baseman. He's usually either going to be a corner infield or a utility guy for you in the majority of formats. And I was able to pair him with Mike Moustakas, the guy we're going to talk about next, makes me feel pretty good because I can kind of rotate him in off my bench when he's got a lefty coming up, especially the tough lefties in that division like Bumgarner and Kershaw. So I love Lamb. I love the power potential. I love the fact that he walks. I think he's really underrated this year because of the depth of the position. But like you guys mentioned, he walks. He hits for power. And, I mean, you know, the average isn't great, but, again, you know, I'm not a guy who really worries too much about batting average, and I think that could take a step forward and maybe go back a little bit closer to the 2015 levels. Matt, what are your thoughts on Jake Lamb?
Man, it's hard to follow you guys. You guys literally knocked off every point on my list here. Lamb is – gotta love where he's at the ballpark. Gotta love hitting behind Paul Goldschmidt. That's always a good thing. They have him penciled in they have him hitting second on roster resource. I don't know about that. I think he probably hits fourth. But either way, he's around Goldschmidt, which is a nice little added boost to the value. He's my second favorite buy at third base this year. Going around pick 150 is criminal. And Justin, you touched on Moustakas. I think that's the only better value out there right now at that position. But you look at Jake Lamb, everything is the recipe for a buy late. There's a big second half struggle. Kind of platoon issues. I think he works through those a little bit. He's going to be better than that against lefties. He's not going to be like a stud, but if, you know, daily leagues, a little added bonus, you can move around on the bench. You get him a 150 overall. So, I mean, you take what you can get, but you gotta love 29 home runs or with 30 homer upside. And he's going to probably hit 250, 260 with little improvements this year. Like I said, good lineup, good ballpark. There's a lot to love here. I love Jake Lamb for this year.
Yeah, I got him as the 164th pick, and then paired him with Moustakas at 212. So, I mean,
yeah, wow.
If you're doing that, I think you're probably doing all right.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's move on to Mike Moustakas. Mike, you've been a really, really huge proponent of him so far this offseason, and I think we may all agree with you, but go ahead and tell us why.
I mean, the guy certainly has to worry about the stolen bases because he tore his ACL or MCL. So we certainly have to worry about that. I'm just kidding. But at the end of the day, he's going to be hitting second in a Royals lineup. While they, you know, were 23rd in runs scored last year, I think losing Mike Moustakas is a big reason why they were that bad. And everybody is shitting on the Royals this offseason. And I think they're kind of in for a rude awakening, because while I don't think they're going to be like some juggernaut of an offensive team, I do think getting Moustakas back, getting Kane back for hopefully a healthier type of year, getting Brandon Moss to kind of replace Kendrys Morales, and then having Jorge Soler there, if you can get anything out of him, I think that they're in a pretty decent spot. And Moustakas made some pretty significant gains the season before in terms of contact. His plate skills are getting better. The pop is still going to be there for him. I think he's a 20 home run bat. And again, hitting second, I think you can, as long as he stays healthy, you can pretty much pencil in somewhere between 70 and 80 runs scored with a pretty good opportunity for RBIs as well. I love the guy, especially where he's going in drafts. He's pretty much free at this point, just outside of the top 200. Him and Castellanos, I've said it since ADPs came out, him and Castellanos are in a really good spot down there. And if there's any argument to kind of pass up Jake Lamb 50 spots earlier, it's just because those guys are going at such a more economical price. But I have no problem going Jake Lamb and then going with Moustakas as your corner if you want to go that route and, you know, buy some first baseman early in the draft and outfielders, pitchers, etc. Because Moustakas, I feel, is a safe option, still going very, very late, and should provide pretty solid batting average, home runs, and runs scored as well.
Sammy, what are your thoughts on Mike Moustakas for this year?
So I feel bad because I'm going to be the shade thrower here, but to me, I'm just personally not a fan of Moustakas, man. He's, in his whole career, he's had one passable fantasy season. That was 2015. He hit .284 with 22 homers, 82 RBIs. He's never scored runs. He's never stolen bases. He's in a vacuous lineup. He's in a cavernous ballpark. To me, he's not really a starter in fantasy. I'm on board with the fact that he was growing as a hitter before he had the ACL tear. But the other thing is, when you're a hitter and you have a significant lower body injury, you never know how that's going to affect you moving forward. And so there's some question marks with him. I agree that he's a value in drafts, but I look at the two guys, the guy going ahead and the guy going behind him, Ryan Healy, who I'm a big fan of, and you mentioned Nick Castellanos, who I'm also a big fan of. I'd rather have either of those two guys than Mike Moustakas this year.
Oh, we're making a bet on Healy right now. Healy and Moustakas, me and you.
Oh, let's rock it, man. Side bet time. I love it.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out something, but usually we change Twitter avatars, but I already have that going on with a Brandon Belt bet from, you know, a couple weeks ago. But yeah, we definitely have to do something with Healy.
Definitely down. Cool.
All right, Matt, break the tie between these two. Are you a Moustakas guy or not?
Typically, no, but for the value of this year, yeah. I mean, I wish he got to play in a good ballpark, because that would kind of seal the deal for me 100%. But I love Moustakas, especially where he's going at 202. I mean, you can't beat that. You said you got him at 212. That's ridiculous value. Obviously, I'm not going into a draft with him locked in as my third baseman, because it's a deep position. There's a lot of guys in front of him that I do like. But if I can get him as a corner outfielder, or even better, as a bench or utility option, man, or a bench utility option, you have to love that. Yeah, platoon issues, but they're not as bad as Lamb. I think there's 30 homer upside. I think the batting average should be 260, 270. I think that's out of the question. And I think with batting second in the Royals order, you got to think he's going to be up for some runs. RBIs, depending on who the – depending if they have Escobar and his 255 OBP in front of him, but different issue there. But you got to like Moustakas. He's going to get all the playing time he can handle, so it's a good bet.
Yeah, I've been a big Moustakas guy since they drafted him. I mean, he was the number two overall pick in 2007, and I've been kind of following his career since then. I always thought he was going to turn into a superstar. Hasn't been able to do that. I don't think those days are ever necessarily going to happen. But here's the thing, because I mean, I think what scares a lot of people is, one, the injury from last season. And I think as long as he looks healthy coming in, and we're getting to, you know, see him now play, I'm not necessarily as worried about that. And the other is the lineup in the ballpark. Here's the thing, he's a free agent after this year, so I think there's a really good chance he ends up getting traded halfway through this season, especially if the Royals fall out of it, and that can only help his draft stock, or his stock, because more than likely, unless he ends up in like San Francisco, which I just don't see happening, he's going to end up in a better hitter environment. And imagine if he ends up in Boston or, you know, in Yankee Stadium. I think he could end up in a really nice location for him, and that will only help him in the second half. I love where he's going. Obviously, I took him at pick 212, and he filled my corner infield slot in that 12-team league. I just think he's going at too low of a value to not jump all over when he's there. I'll be interested to see what the terms of your guys' bet, because Healy's a guy that I'm not quite ready to 100% buy in on, but I see the upside that people are talking about. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Jung-Hoo Kang. And Sammy, what are your thoughts on him this year? Is he too risky considering all the legal issues pending for him?
Yeah, man. I mean, I love Kang in a DUI-only league. You know, he potentially also contributes in sexual assault, so he's like a multi-category contributor here.
Jose Reyes, Aroldis Chapman. He is going he's going second to last in that league, though, a three-player format.
Yeah, he's solid, man. Multi-category contributor. I mean, the thing I like about Kang is, A, when you talk about values, his average ADP right now is 247. This is a guy who crushed souls in Korea. And last year, his isolated slugging percentage was 258. For point of reference, Chris Bryant's was 262. Now, I don't think he's nearly the kind of caliber hitter that Chris Bryant is, but I think that just goes to show the kind of upside this guy has. When you're taking guys in the mid-200s, I'm not looking for, like, steady, solid, you know, oh, yeah, he's going to hit 17 homers kind of guy. I want a guy who could potentially break out and be huge. I do think Jung-Hoo Kang is that guy. Even if you don't like him on a personal level, and he's pretty morally reprehensible when you're just looking at what he's done. But when you're looking at this year's stats, man, I think he's got a ton of upside, and I like him at his ADP.
I'm sorry, but that's got to be the funniest thing that's ever said on this podcast.
That was good.
It's up there for sure.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Jung-Hoo Kang?
I guess for a lack of fantasy analysis really here, there's too many question marks for me. I will not take a flyer in anything other than an NL only or the super deep league, and I will not count on him as anything more than a bench bat. I know that's a cop-out, but with all the legal issues he's got going on, I'm staying away. Sorry.
Mike, any thoughts on Kang?
Yeah, I mean, first I'll say that he proved me wrong last year because I was really down on him, and he came in and, you know, he swatted over 20 home runs. He improved his walk rate. The batting average should get a little bit better based on the skills. So I think as a player, his skills are intact and he can certainly hit 20 home runs. My issue is, the obvious. I just don't know when he's going to play. I think maybe we can base his possible sentence on what Jose Reyes got, like 30 games. That's not including whatever, you know, the Pirates actually do to him in terms of, you know, suspending him or whatever. But I would say if you even get, you know, say 50 games off of Jung-Hoo Kang's, you know, projection, you probably still have a guy that's going to hit 15 plus home runs and bat somewhere between, you know, 260, 280. That's pretty solid where he's going. And if there is news that he is suspended prior to draft starting, then his draft stock is going to plummet. And that might present a buying opportunity. NL only is certainly a place to get him, but I think in deeper mix too, there's certainly a, you know, justifiable reason to draft somebody like Kang just out of the pure possibility of him continuing what he's done and, you know, getting back to the field hopefully sooner rather than later. But I agree, there is a ton of question marks around him. If I'm drafting right this second, I'm willing to take a shot because there is so many questions. That's usually how I like to do things. But at the end of the day, it is risky taking a guy that possibly could be out longer than I'm thinking.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you guys haven't mentioned yet is he's got his sentencing for his DUI, or his most recent DUI, which is his third, on March 3rd. So there's a real good chance that he doesn't even come back this season. Like, he may be in a Korean prison. I mean, I don't know how strict their sentencing guidelines are on their DUIs, but I do know that I believe that their limit on a DUI is a .02. For reference, the majority of states in the United States is a .08. So they're really, really strict on drunk driving in terms of at what level you can drive at. If it's anything like the United States in terms of sentencing, typically you can be thrown in prison for a year for your third DUI, depending on what state you live in the United States. So I think there's a really good chance he doesn't even play this year. So until I know that, and that doesn't even bake in the alleged sexual assault that happened in Chicago last season, that still is charges pending. So I don't think there's any way I can take him until I know those certainties. So, I mean, if I've got a draft this week, I'm not touching him. He was pretty much off my draft board in all the drafts I've had so far this season. I love him as a player. I think he is a very talented player. I think he is often underrated. But until I know that, one, that he is going to not be in prison in Korea, two, is actually going to be able to get a visa, which I don't believe he has accomplished at this point for this year, and considering the political climate, it may be much more difficult to do so. I don't think he can be drafted in any format until those things are cleared up.
I do just want to add that the Pirates have alternative guys behind him. They have David Freese. They also traded for Phil Gosselin. They have Alan Hansen. They have Kevin Newman. Adam Frazier. They have a ton of guys that can replace him at third base if and when he is out for the season. So,
yeah. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Yuleski Gurriel. Matt, what are your thoughts on Gurriel? Because there's some people who really love him this year and some people who don't.
I'm very meh, and I know that's not really great, but I think he can do better. He's the one prospect in our prospect pods, Justin, that was as older than you.
Yeah.
So you had that going for you. But
he's got me by about 5 months.
Yeah. So the thing with Gurriel, though, he had a lot of weak contact last year, but you kind of have to throw out what he did last year. First year adjusting to the States, getting acclimated. Obviously a big culture shock, and obviously coming over older and, you know, have family issues, worried about his brother and all that stuff coming over too. And it makes it all really tough. Base skills are probably not going to be there. He reminds me, like, at best, like a Yunel Escobar type. And I'm not interested in a guy like that unless I'm in an AL-only format. So Gurriel is a boring, safe option as far as playing time. But other than that, I'm out.
Sammy, what are your thoughts on Gurriel?
Yeah, man, I don't really have that hot of a take on Gurriel because the reality is we just don't know. You know, he was a big star in Cuba. He had a layoff from professional baseball. Now he's finally here, but he's 33 years old, and we only saw 137 plate appearances from him last year. So I think it's fine, but when you're looking like Leighton Mixer, as I talked about, I really like going for upside. I don't know how much he has, and you know, there's other guys going after him in ADP that I like better. A lot of these guys are first basemen, but at this point in the draft, you pretty much have your starting spots locked up. So you're really just looking like corner, middle, outfield, whatever. Guys going after him, Justin Bour, Lucas Duda, Kenny Vargas. These guys, I think, have more upside and more stability than Gurriel. So I'm probably not going to get him in a lot of places.
Mike, are you going to get Gurriel?
I think he is a really good AL-only play because they wouldn't have signed him if they didn't want him to play full-time, and I think he will pretty much play full-time. Right now, I have him penciled in for almost 500 at-bats, and that yields 18 home runs is what I have him projected for. Is that based on anything that I know? No, because I haven't seen enough of Gurriel to really have a strong, you know, basis for that, but I do think Gurriel is going to get a full time of at bats. He does exhibit strong plate skills. He doesn't walk a ton, but he is somebody that, you know, throughout his time in Cuba, he was pretty strong at walking and always really good at making contact. The Houston lineup, I think, is going to take a step up this year overall. You know, they have Bregman there full time. They have Reddick, who I like. They also have, you know, Gurriel, who makes a ton of contact along with all their other stars. So, no, is he a high upside play in mixers? I don't think so. But I do think in AL only, he is going to provide some stability. And if you are late in the draft, then you can do worse than getting somebody like Gurriel, who's probably going to help you out in a bunch of different categories. Even though he's not a speed guy, he should be able to give you a steady batting average and should give you a couple home runs as well. So I don't hate him.
Here's the one thing. If you take Gurriel, I think you should try and get AJ Reed, who had a terrible debut last year, but he was a monster in the minor leagues. He's got a really long swing, so we're not sure how that'll translate, but if Gurriel falters, A.J. Reed will probably be the guy that comes up and takes over. He's got upside. So, again, if you're an AL only, I like pairing those guys late.
Yeah.
That's a good,
The one thing with Reed, though, I always go back to Jonathan Singleton, who wasn't compared to Reed exactly.
That's messed up.
They even gave him a 5-year extension, and they never really brought him. They brought him up, but they never brought him up when they were in contention, and they just kind of gave up on him. I don't see the same thing happening with Reed, and I completely agree to draft AJ Reed alongside Gurriel or just by himself. I would take Reed above Gurriel based on the upside alone, but there is always that risk that Houston is no bullshit with their guys. If you're not going to perform, then they're not going to bring you up, and they did sign Gurriel, so it kind of goes both ways, but. I do think that there's a little bit more risk with Reed if he doesn't turn it around than we think.
I always kind of like to shoot for the moon this late in drafts and grab some high upside guys. So that's probably why I'm so anti-Gurriel sounding on my analysis there. But I think late rounds are for speculative guys, and I don't the upside for me is not there. I get what you're saying, Mike, and I get Sam makes a really good point about Reed, but I just say skip Gurriel and just draft Reed. Fuck it.
Yeah, I just Mike said he's got him projected for about 18 home runs.
I think that's aggressive.
I think that's super aggressive. I don't think I would project him.
Super aggressive? 18 home runs? Really?
Yeah, I don't think he's that type of guy.
No, I don't either. I think he's much more doubles than homers, and I think he's going to end up, if he hits 15 home runs, I'll be surprised. Like, I mean, I would set the over-under at 13.5, and I would lean the under. I just don't think he's going to hit for a ton of power. I do wonder about whether or not he's going to get a ton of plate appearances, because if he struggles, it's not like he offers a ton in upside for the team. They have Evan Gattis, who they need to find plate appearances. That, like you guys mentioned, they've got AJ Reed in the minors, who was the hottest prospect in fantasy circles this time last year. I think that this is a guy that is easily replaced. If he struggles, he hasn't had a lot of exposure to American pitching. I think he could easily struggle. He's only 32, he's already 32 years old. He's going to be 33 in season, so it's not like he's got a long-term future necessarily with the ball club. I just think there's so many negatives and really not enough upside to warrant taking him. I mean, going after him, I'd rather have Travis Shaw.
I think in mixers he's almost undraftable. I'm talking more AL only, where you need a stable guy.
I smell a side bet on 13.5 homers right now.
Yeah, I definitely am in to take that. I think I'm projecting him to play all year. That's the thing. Like, even if you project a guy to be a doubles hitter, 15 home runs is almost bankable in terms of having a guy that has 450 plus at bats. So I'm definitely willing to go that route.
Sammy, I'll take the under on 13.5 runs for Yuli Gurriel or home runs for Yuli Gurriel for this season. Loser has to change their profile picture to a picture of the winner's choosing on Twitter for 2 weeks.
Whoa! Wait a second. I'm out of the Gurriel sweepstakes. Okay. I'm trying to barter this with y'all.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were on this.
I like how he just went straight to Mike was talking and he skipped him to go straight to Sammy. I get what you're saying. Mike.
I'm just trying to instigate here.
I'm just trying to start.
Mike's already got a Twitter profile pic bet going on with Hosmer and Belt.
You probably eat your steak well done with ketchup, don't you?
No, I eat my steak still mooing. But here's my point. Mike, you said AL only. Would you rather have Gurriel for this season or Matt Duffy?
I would rather have probably Matt Duffy.
Sammy?
Gurriel.
Matt?
Duffy.
I'm going to take Duffy as well. Would you rather have Gurriel or Pablo Sandoval?
Oh, God.
Gurriel.
I'd rather jump into a vat.
Yeah. I'd rather jump into a really dark van at 3 a.m. and
take last one.
With no windows, right?
a guy going over almost 200 picks after him, AL only, would you rather have Trevor Plouffe or Yuri Gurriel? Because I'll take Trevor Plouffe.
I'm taking Gurriel.
Yeah, I'm going Gurriel there.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the last guy. That is the aforementioned Matt Duffy. And when we talk about Rays, who are having trouble walking currently, we always throw it to Mike. Mike, what are your thoughts on Matt Duffy?
From all accounts, Matt Duffy should be healthy going into the season. He's had, you know, he is recovering from an ankle problem, an Achilles problem, and he, you know, got surgery on it. It got corrected in the offseason, and, you know, based on all the Rays information I've seen, he should be ready to go once, you know, 2017 begins. I think that he's a strong batting average asset. I kind of throw last year out the window a bit because he was injured so much. And, you know, the park change really isn't much different. You know, Tropicana actually is better than AT&T Park in a lot of ways for hitting. But I think that, you know, based on where he's going to be hitting in the lineup, which is probably going to be either up top or somewhere in the five range, he should get a decent amount of runs scored. He's definitely not going to be a power asset, but he should be able to drive in a few, steal a few bases. I mean, I don't think he's going to get the 12 that he got in 2015, but again, not somebody that you're looking for in mixed leagues. He's going to be more of a stable asset in AL only that you kind of just are whatever about. He doesn't offer a ton of upside or anything, but he does have the ability to hit for double digit home runs and possibly get you, you know, 5-8 steals somewhere in there and get some decent RBI and run numbers for you. Not a really great option.
Sammy, what are your thoughts on Matt Duffy for this year?
Yeah, I'm kind of on board with that. I hate to throw all the shade at all these Rays. I know Yancey's going to be listening and he's just going to be so sore at us, especially me. But
yeah, more you, not us.
Yeah, definitely me. I mean, here's the thing. The guy doesn't have a ton of power. He's slugged 412 in the minors, so far 395 in the majors. He's got a little speed and some batting average upside, so I agree that he's an AL-only play. I'm not really drafting him in mixers, particularly 12-teamers. I feel like his upside is maybe, you know, 10 homers and 12 steals. Again, that's not really enough for me in mixers, especially with the upside. The other thing you got to worry about is his playing time. He's penciled in as the starter now, but you know they're going to want to give Nick Franklin some time as well. We're not quite sure how that's going to play out, so I don't even think he's assured of full-time PT. So for the time being, I'm kind of off Matt Duffy.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Matt Duffy?
Kind of got a throw out last year. The Achilles injury, obviously that'll kill any speed value that he could possibly contribute. Getting traded and changing leagues isn't ideal. Position switch isn't ideal. But throw it all that, he's still not all that exciting. He's a safe option for AL only, like these guys all touched on, because I don't think the Rays are going to rush up Willy Adames, and they're kind of really out on Tim Beckham, so I don't really see that as an option. If Duffy, for some reason, falters, I don't think he will. But, I mean, he's a boring vanilla option. But sometimes those are nice to have at the bottom of your bench. He should have third base and shortstop eligibility for next year, which is an added bonus in minor leagues like that. So you can do worse, but I'm not actively trying to get him in mixed leagues, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this was the cornerstone of the Matt Moore trade to San Francisco, and it was...
I think Lucius Fox was, to be honest.
But. Well, according to the reports that... Tampa Bay, the Giants did not want to trade Matt Duffy, and Tampa Bay would only do the deal if Matt Duffy was a part of it.
That's strange.
Yeah, they want him at shortstop, by the way. Yeah. If anybody's playing time is going to suffer, it's going to be Brad Miller at second, because Nick Franklin, while he could play shortstop, they're not going to put him there. Like, Brad Miller is, or Matt Duffy is... other than Kevin Kiermaier and Evan Longoria, he's going to be a full-time player, unless barring injury.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, they can easily move Miller to first when Logan Morrison is on the wrong side of the platoon there, you know, and then put Nick Franklin in at second. So I don't think Duffy's going to lose playing time if he's healthy. I think the only question for me is health. I think he's the perfect guy in AL only, especially because he can cover two positions on the infield for you. If I'm remembering correctly, I took him in the CBS AL only auction. So I mean, he's a guy that I think offers, I mean, he doesn't offer a ton of upside, but in terms of positional eligibility and counting stats, I think he'll be fine as long as he's healthy and ready to go. And so far, he's on track to be so. You know, I was never the biggest Matt Duffy fan in San Francisco, but I think he is going to be at least an interesting guy in really deep formats, especially AL only. So that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Sammy, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, man. This was so much fun. I'm a huge fan of the show. Really appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you, man.
We appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you being a huge fan of the show, even though you snaked me way too many times in that goddamn draft this weekend. why don't you tell people again where you can be reached on social media, and then plug all the stuff you're doing, especially your podcast.
Yeah, man. On Twitter, at SammyReedFI for the lukewarm jokes and takes. You can find the Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast with my boy Doug Thorburn and me. That's on iTunes and Stitcher. And then I also do weekly DFS columns on FantasyInsiders.com.
Yeah, definitely check out all the stuff he does on for DFS on Fantasy Insiders. Definitely check out the Baseball Holics podcast. And Doug's going to be on next week for our starting pitching week. So, Doug, you're definitely going to want to check that out. It was a blast getting to meet you in person on Saturday and drafting with you and hanging out with you afterwards. We will definitely have you back on in season.
Awesome, my man. Looking forward to it.
Matt, what are you working on, and where can people reach you?
MD Temp, FWFB. I'll probably have an up, not this week or anything like that, obviously, but maybe in a couple of weeks I'll have an update to the top 200 prospect list I put out. I mean, there wouldn't be much to update right now, barring injuries, and thankfully
we
haven't had any.
Are you saying that, like, Lewis Brinson, 2 home runs in one game, isn't pushing him to the top of your prospect list?
Against Western
one of them,
Michigan.
One of them was off of a college kid that threw in the mid-80s, so no.
What was the other one off of, like, a college kid that threw 70?
I think it was against a major league team, to be honest. I think it was today, actually. But
No, he had 2 in one game.
Yeah, 2 in the first game against the college, yeah.
Against Western Wisconsin or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, in that case, I mean.
Which is actually Chuck's alma mater.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Now I feel bad for bashing it.
I feel bad for Western Wisconsin. But anyway, sorry, Chuck. We love you. But anyways, so find me on there. That'll continuously be updated throughout this spring here, maybe a little bit here in the future. Thanks for listening. And Sammy, awesome guest, man. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
Mike, what are you working on? Where can people reach you at?
Yeah, Sammy, thanks again for coming on, even though, you know, Matt and I were the third and fourth wheels, and we kind of just sat here a lot of the show. We appreciate all the funny jokes.
Hey, it was really nice to snake you guys after snaking Justin on Saturday. So.
Yeah, you're all about the snakes and the stiffies. That's what you're about. But, no, honestly, I really do love y'all's show. You know, Doug Thorburn is, like, honestly, in my opinion, the best fantasy analyst in terms of starting pitching out there. So that's sharp. No offense to anybody else, but he's absolutely great. And, you know, I think you guys just do a great job. So appreciate having you on. Check out my stuff on the site, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Check out the prospect show with myself, Matt Thompson, and Andy Anderson on Thursdays. And I'm still working on my piece. I had a really busy week at work this week, so I couldn't write that this week, but it'll be get done, I promise. And check out my daily matchups column on Baseball HQ this year. It's kind of like the DFS version of what they do there, so check it all out.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. if you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, we will hook you up and either get you into a listener league, or you'll be eligible to win other prizes. I ordered 5 extra shirts off of our Friends of Fantasy Benefits shirt sale, and I just want to, you know, want to thank everybody for getting involved. That we went over what we set as our goal. You know, I think a lot of it was me buying it, but sure, it still worked out. And so what I'm going to do is I've got that, and I've got a bunch of Rec Room gear still from I think last year. And so what I'm going to do is over the course of the next few months, I'm going to start giving that out based on reviews. I think I'll do 1 shirt a month for like my favorite review or our favorite review. And we'll announce that on this Monday podcast. And then I'll do 1 random review kind of drawn out of a hat. So if you want to get in on that, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We will read those reviews out on the air. And then you will have to contact me, and I will send you a free shirt. So I only got large and extra large, so you're kind of stuck with that if you're a little guy. But definitely help us out there. You can read all my stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or on FanGraphs. I should have kind of my review of the Barf draft coming up, and I promise I will say something disparaging about Sammy in that review. So that will wrap us up for this episode. For Mike, Matt, Sammy, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. Welcome to episode 227 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy analyst, and blah, 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 blah.
That's a good start.
Yeah, lead fantasy analyst and sheep heater.
And sheep herder.
Herder.